So today I am going to talk about zazen, about sitting meditation. Thanks, I'll speak up. I just got hearing aids recently, so I'm like trying to figure out how that works. I appreciate when people say, can you speak up? Because so the first thing I want to say about zazen is that it's a mystery. It's a mystery to the self. It's like life or birth and death. So one of the central aspects of zazen is learning to sit with mystery. Zazen has its own logic, but it's not the self's logic. And the challenge is to become that logic, to become intimate with that logic, and to become that logic. So we can't think ourselves into it. We'd like to, you know. We'd like to be able to think ourselves into life, or think ourselves into death, or think ourselves into birth, right? We love to know. We love to know and figure things out and get it nailed down. But it doesn't take long for us to figure out that life doesn't work that way. So, then what do we do? How can we learn to become this mystery? We don't solve it. We don't solve this mystery. We become intimate with it. Weave it into the self. So, we don't bring our preconceived... Well, we do bring our preconceived notions to it. I mean, we're humans. We bring preconceived notions to everything. What is a friendship going to be like? What is a meal going to be like? What is... I mean, this is what we do. And it doesn't mean much, though, really. It gives us something to hang on to in a certain way to negotiate our world. But if we try and wrench zazen into the categories, developmental phases, strategies that we cling to, and that so often dominate our minds and hearts and lives, we create suffering. We say, oh, it was supposed to be this way, and it's not that way. So I must be failing, or I must be succeeding, or whatever. But this, you know, this awareness of the mystery and the logic that isn't our logic of zazen and of life and of birth and death, sometimes we think if we say that, then we say, well, I guess there's nothing we can do. Just roll along. But that's not right either. Acknowledging the mystery doesn't mean we don't do anything. It means we learn how to bring ourselves to this, how to fully bring ourselves. How to become intimate with it so that we're transformed by it. In Tibetan teachings, there's a way of understanding this process that I find helpful. And it's a way of framing what's called absolute and relative bodhicitta. Any of you familiar with that? Absolute and relative bodhicitta. So, bodhicitta is the mind of awakening. So, bodhi is the same root as Buddha, it's awakening. And citta is mind or consciousness. So, bodhicitta is the mind of awakening or the mind that aspires to awakening. You know, there's a lot you can say about it, but today we can talk about the aspiration. It's the mind that aspires to wake up for the benefit of all beings. So it's a spark that fuels our practice. If we allow it, it can guide our lives. It's this orientation, this energy. Absolute bodhicitta is seeing things completely as they are. It's wisdom, complete wisdom. So when we're thinking about this in terms of zazen, we can think of it as the capacity to sit completely with justice. It's the complete realization of shikantaza, just seeing things as they are, completely present. No strategies, no need to get anywhere, just wisdom. Relative bodhicitta is often designated as, or spoken about as, compassion. But it's also the realm of how. What do we do to orient ourselves in such a way as to realize absolute bodhicitta, wisdom? In Tibetan Buddhism, there are many, many, many well thought out, well structured, beautifully constructed ways of doing this. So, for example, some of you may have heard of the Lojong sayings, or Tonglen practice, or compassion practices. There are ways to train the mind, heart, and body to cultivate bodhicitta. So, we can think of absolute bodhicitta, as when Dogen Zenji says, zazen is the dharma gate of repose and bliss, totally culminated enlightenment, right? And then you sit there for 40 minutes and you say, really? This is totally culminated enlightenment? This mind? You know, Shinshu was talking about Shiryu, Fushiryu, and Hishiryu, the thinking, and then like not thinking. The effort to not think. And then non-thinking, which is we think, we have feelings, our body aches, and it is what it is. And we keep coming back, keep coming back, keep coming back. So, absolute bodhicitta, shikantaza, just sitting, this is we enter this. We enter this. We trust this. We simply sit. We return to our cushion over and over and over, and we allow ourselves to be this mystery. But, as I said, it's easy to say. We usually ask ourselves how, don't we? How do I do this? How do I bring myself? What can I do to support my ability to be what I already am? Sometimes people think Soto Zen doesn't have anything to say about this, but if you look at Dogen Zenji's teachings, Keizan Zenji's teachings, there's a lot that he has to say. Lots of instructions about how, lots of relative bodhicitta practices is what I'm saying today. He's talking about how to cultivate and train the mind and heart, paths and practices that bring us, that orient us, that allow us to enter this. Does this make sense? Yeah. So one of the one of the specific ways he talks about this is in the Tenso Kyokun, which is instructions to the cook. So one of the hallmarks of Soto Zen is the way in which we view ordinary life and work and things like cutting carrots and cleaning toilets as practice, as equivalent to zazen. In the Zen monastery, the kitchen practice and zazen practice equal. So what that means is we can look at descriptions of kitchen practice and see it as a zazen instruction. See it as the way in which we orient ourselves in our practice. Mental constructions are the same thing as creating a pot of soup, right? How we encounter our minds is the same as how we encounter carrots and barley and the other people that we're working with. So, what I want to do is take a few quotes and see what we find in terms of instructions for zazen. The first one says, clean the chopsticks, ladles, and all other utensils. Handle them with equal care and awareness, putting everything back where it naturally belongs. Keep your mind on your work and do not throw things around carelessly. Okay? So, you come in, and by the way, zazen starts before you get on your cushion, right? Zazen starts when you're born, but zazen starts as you drive here, as you get out of your car, as you walk in, as you place your shoes on the rack, as you take your seat. So he says, clean chopsticks, ladles, and all other utensils. Handle them with equal care and awareness. Handle everything that you're doing with equal care and awareness. And when you sit down on your cushion, handle everything that arises with equal care and awareness. Put everything back where it naturally belongs. You know, when you're thinking about work and the project that's due on Monday or Wednesday, it belongs in a certain place. You're not sitting there thinking about it on your zazen. You say, okay, it has a place. Put it in its place. Leave it there. Put it where it naturally belongs. Keep your mind on your work. During zazen, when you're in the kitchen, it means paying attention to how you're cutting carrots. When you're at your desk, it's about how do you answer that email. In zazen, it's about what do you do with your mind and body in this moment. How do you pay attention in this moment? And do not throw things around carelessly. When things arise in your mind, you can throw them around carelessly. In another place, I don't know if I have it in here, he says, allow things that belong in a high place to go in a high place, things that belong in a low place to go in a low place. Right? Things arise in your mind, they can settle. You don't have to do anything. So this is the basic spirit of zazen. We handle things with care. We allow things to take up the place that they have naturally. We don't throw our thoughts and emotions around. We don't stomp on them. We simply allow them to be. We are not careless. He also tells us not to judge. It means not to judge the particular configuration of zazen that you're having in that moment. It's just, that's what zazen is in that moment. He says, when you prepare food, never view the ingredients from some commonly held perspective, nor think about them only with your emotions. When you prepare zazen, never think of the ingredients or view the ingredients from your commonly held perspective. Then he says, maintain an attitude that tries to build great temples from ordinary grains, that expound the Buddha Dharma through the most trivial activity. When making a soup with ordinary grains, do not be carried away by feelings of dislike toward them, nor regard them lightly. Neither jump for joy simply because you have been given ingredients of superior quality to make a dish, do not be negligent and careless just because the materials seem plain. Work diligently with materials of whatever quality. Your attitude toward things should not be contingent upon their quality. Okay? This is Zazen instruction. When you prepare Zazen, don't view ingredients, in other words, what comes to your mind and heart, from a common perspective. Maintain an attitude that builds a great temple from this ordinary life, this ordinary mind. When making a soup with ordinary greens, do not be carried away with feelings or like or dislike. When anger comes up, anger comes up. When your mind starts going after that you need to clean out the refrigerator, you know, or something really powerful is happening in your life, don't regard them lightly, but also don't get carried away. Don't judge. Don't jump for joy. If you have this like serene period of Zazen, right? Don't jump for joy. It's just a serene period of Zazen. When you sit down and it's just one grueling coming back after coming back after coming back after coming back, don't judge that. Don't be negligent. Your attitude towards Zazen should not be contingent upon the quality that you think it has. So, when we maintain this attitude, we have what is called the one taste. The one taste. No matter what, there's one taste. He says, a dish is not necessarily superior because you have prepared it with choice ingredients, nor is a soup inferior because you have made it with ordinary greens. When handling and selecting greens, do so wholeheartedly with a pure mind and without trying to evaluate their quality, in the same way in which you would prepare a splendid feast. The many rivers which flow into the ocean become the one taste of the ocean. The many rivers, the many streams of thought or emotion that flow into this period of Zazen become the ocean of Zazen. When they flow into the pure ocean of the Dharma, there is no such distinctions as delicacies or plain food. There is just one taste, and that is the Buddha Dharma, the world itself as it is. In cultivating the germ of aspiration, bodhicitta, to live out the way as well as in practicing the Dharma, delicious and ordinary tastes are the same, not two. Likewise, understand that a simple green has the power to become the practice of the Buddha, quite adequately nurturing the desire to live out the way. Never feel aversion toward plain ingredients. Make the best use of whatever greens you have. All right? So, the capacity to taste is not dependent upon what we're tasting, right? That capacity, we're just tasting all these different things. But that's the core of our mind. That's our awareness. We can be aware of anything. Everything. That's one taste. When we develop that capacity to be aware That's the ocean of Dharma. It supports us no matter what. We're buoyed by it. No matter what. There is just one taste. And that is the Buddha Dharma, the world itself as it is. Is there any other world? Is there some other world? Maybe. Who knows? You know, they talk about multiple dimensions and all that. But even that's included. If we want to cultivate the germ of aspiration to live out the way, as well as in practicing the Dharma, in other words, if we want to cultivate bodhicitta, we are not distracted by delicious or plain ingredients. We're not distracted by what happens to arise in our mind. We make the best use of whatever greens we have. Whatever happens. This is the practice that becomes the power of the Buddha. So, he also mentions at the end of this that there are qualities of mind that he describes as key to this effort. The first is joyful mind. Okay? Joyful mind. Not grim mind. Not tense mind. Not judging mind. Joyful mind. Kishin. When we cultivate joyful mind through forming a strong connection to the Buddha Dharma, we support buoyancy and gratitude, right? And when we support gratitude and buoyancy, isn't joy there? So we consider this. We consider the elements that support joyful mind. We open up that question for ourselves. We take it seriously. You know, serious can be like, when I was a girl, there used to be this cartoon of a baby vulture. And he would like sit there, really, like this baby vulture. And we don't want to be the baby vulture when we're sitting zazen, right? Take this seriously. Serious means but he's saying no. What you have to take seriously is the cultivation of joyful mind. That's the fuel of our practice. Doesn't mean happy, 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 oh, everything's okay. It means really considering what is the root of joy in your life. And guaranteed aggression and judgment, no joy there, right? Mm-hmm. So if you say to yourself, I should be more joyful, I should be more grateful, you know, there you go. Not happy, not joyful. The second quality is roshin, the mind of a caring parent toward a child. So we are asked to cultivate this and maintain it towards whatever comes our way. He says, roshin is the mind or attitude of a parent. A parent, irrespective of poverty or difficult circumstance, loves and raises a child with care. In this same manner, you should handle water, rice, or anything else. When you handle water, rice, or anything else, you must have the affectionate and caring concern of a parent raising a child. This includes discipline, right? This includes structure, not discipline, but loving structure. So when we sit zazen, we bring the mind of a parent to that. We create structure. We tell ourselves what we want to do. We create a supportive environment. And we love ourselves into awareness. We grow that. We identify what are the elements for me that support this caring, nurturing, firm, loving presence to my zazen. Irrespective of difficulties, we bring that mind to bear. The last quality that he talks about is daishin. Dai means great or vast, but this is usually translated as magnanimous mind or generous mind. He says, magnanimous mind, daishin, is like a mountain, stable and impartial. So this is equanimity, right? Equanimity, as we know, is not like squishing everything down, flattening it out. It's being so stable that anything can arise and we're not thrown by it. Magnanimous mind, daishin, is like a mountain, stable and impartial, exemplifying the ocean. It is tolerant and views everything from the broadest perspective. This is the attitude of zazen. Having a magnanimous mind means being without prejudice and refusing to take sides. When carrying something that weighs an ounce, do not think of it as light. And likewise, when you are carrying 50 pounds, do not think of it as heavy. Do not get carried away by the sounds of spring, nor become heavy-hearted upon seeing the colors of fall. View the changes of the season as a whole and weigh the relativeness of light and heavy from a broad perspective. It is then that you should write, understand, and study the character for magnanimous. So, when we sit down and we are light-hearted, do not think of it as light. When we are carrying 50 pounds, when things are hard and difficult, do not think of it as heavy. You will, but broaden your perspective. Bring a full perspective to it. Don't get carried away with the sounds of spring. Not that you don't appreciate when spring comes, when the birds sing, the trees blossom. You appreciate it. Don't get carried away. In seeing the colors of fall, don't become heavy-hearted. Impermanence is the nature of things. There is fall. There is loss. You know, we appreciate the colors of maples, but they're dying. So we don't, we view the seasons of our lives from a broad perspective. We include, this includes, of course, light and heavy. But we have this broader, magnanimous view, this stability. And he invites us to understand the character for magnanimous. Magna in Latin means great. And animus is spirit. So this is a lofty and courageous spirit, a nobility of feeling, a generosity of mind. This is what we're asked to build as a foundation for our zazen, and return to again and again these qualities. No matter how we conceive of ourselves or whatever arises in zazen, we keep returning to these qualities. We keep returning to them so that we might be taught by zazen. We might be transformed by zazen. we allow ourselves to be touched by the mystery of life as it is. Dogen Zenji says, "The true bond established between ourselves and the Buddha is born of the smallest offering made with sincerity, rather than some grandiose donation made without it." This is our practice as human beings. So, the true bond established between ourselves and our messiness and our ideas about Dogen and our grumpiness and our elation and our, you know, whatever the hell is going on today. The bond between that and our true nature, our awakening, the ability for us to be touched, is born of the smallest offering made with sincerity. So when we sit Zazen, we think, well, that was crappy. But if it's a sincere offering, if we say, I am sitting here, my intention is to wake up, whatever happens with the spirit of sincerity, that is the true bond with our awakening. We can sit down and have grandiose experiences, but so what? It doesn't transform us. It doesn't transform our world. It might shift, you know. Sometimes we sit zazen and like our world is rocked by something. Okay. But it's the sincerity of effort day after day after day after day. It's like I was talking to a friend of mine in a teacher's meeting once, and he said, "We may not be very bright, but we're stubborn." And this is what Dogen Zenji is teaching us. It's not about the fireworks. It's about the sincerity of the smallest offering, day after day after day after day. In our zazen, it's sitting down, no matter what, and bringing our whole body and mind to that moment. When we do this, Buddha unfolds. Bodhicitta unfolds, awakening unfolds, and it can be quite surprising what that means. He says to us, handle even one leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. So when we sit in zazen, no matter what happens, we handle even that crummy, grubby, dirty, worm-eaten leaf of chard in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This is when we cultivate these minds, when we cultivate absolute and bodhicitta through attention to taking these instructions seriously. That is how to handle each dimension of our life, each heart and mind that arises in zazen as the body of the Buddha. Handle even one leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This in turn allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. Right? So this ordinary zazen, when we handle it in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha, the Buddha is manifest through this simple period of zazen. This is the power. This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. Right? This is a mystery. So, it's not that we don't use our rational mind. It's not that we don't cultivate these, read these, cultivate these relative bodhicitta practices. But we cannot grasp it. It operates freely according to the situation in the most natural way. No matter what is happening with us when we sit zazen, At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. So let me read that whole quote to you again. Think about this in terms of your Zazen practice. It's also how we handle our lives every day, right? Handle even one leaf of green in such a way that it manifests the body of the Buddha. This, in turn, allows the Buddha to manifest through the leaf. This is a power which you cannot grasp with your rational mind. It operates freely according to the situation in the most natural way. At the same time, this power functions in our lives to clarify and settle activities and is beneficial to all living beings. At the same time, this power functions in our lives, in our Zazen, to clarify and settle activities, including our mind and heart, and is beneficial to all living beings. So when we return to these, when we use our mind to think about cultivating these ways of generating a posture, mental, emotional, physical posture in Zazen, this spirit of clarity, beneficence, settledness arises and it benefits us and all living beings. So we don't fool ourselves into thinking that we can figure this out. We don't try and vanquish our mind or ourselves or what's happening in our lives. We don't approach it in that way. We approach our Zazen in the way that Dogen is describing to us, so that we become intimate with the practice. We don't demean, we honor the effort of our Zazen. And we are settled in that way, not so that we become something other than what we are, but that we discover what we already are. Thank you.